Hi, my name's Steve Carlisle from Clearly Training, and this is one in a series of podcasts targeted at the public sector. This podcast is split into two parts, and this podcast is entitled International Financial Reporting Standards and the Public Sector. The two podcasts look at the introduction of international financial reporting standards to the public sector, first of all, and then some of the key differences between UK accounting, which the public sector would have been using prior to the implementation of IFRS. So podcast number one, first of all, during this podcast, we're going to look at public sector accounting in general, and we're also going to have a look at the introduction of international standards into the public sector. So public sector accounting, I'm going to have a quick chat to you about the Financial Reporting Advisory Board, or FRAB, as it's known, and the Financial Reporting Manual, or the FREM. And when I say the FREM, there are, you may be aware, lots of FREMs, lots of financial reporting manuals that are used by different parts of the public sector. You may very well have your own FREM in the organisation that you work for. For example, if you're in the NHS and you work for a foundation trust, there is a specific NHS foundation trust version of the FREM. Okay, so the Financial Reporting Advisory Board, who are they? What do they do? They're an independent board that was set up to advise the government on financial reporting in government. And they advise the Treasury on generally accepted accounting practice and how to apply it both to individual bodies within government and into what's called the whole of government accounts. And the whole of government accounts is the set of accounts that effectively consolidates all of the bits of government into one big set of accounts. The government's consolidation, if you like. The Financial Reporting Advisory Board advises on introducing, or has it advised, I should say, on introducing international financial reporting standards for the whole of government accounts in 2009-2010, when the bulk of the public sector switched to using international financial reporting standards. The Financial Reporting Manual, or manuals, were created in 2005, and they were created to help show how resource accounting, or accruals accounting as it's more commonly known, should be introduced into the public sector. The Financial Reporting Manual used to follow UK generally accepted accounting practice, and we now have a new version which follows international financial reporting standards. The thing to know about the FREM, though, is that not every aspect of the international financial reporting standards are adopted in the FREM. So you have to look at the FREM and see which bits of the standards are being used by the public sector and which bits aren't. And as I said before, you may work in a part of the public sector that it has its own version of the financial reporting manual. So you may have your own specific version that's slightly different to the generic version. Okay. So next I want to talk to you about the introduction of international standards. And first of all, I'm going to talk to you very generally about how international standards have been introduced into the United Kingdom, both in the private sector and in the public sector. And then I'm going to have a look at the changes in terminology that international standards have introduced. And finally, in this section, I'm going to have a look at the International Financial Reporting Standard number one, which talks about rules on conversion, how you convert from your own GAAP, which in this country's case would be UK GAAP, to international GAAP. Okay, so first of all, how were international standards introduced into the UK in the first instance, and why were they introduced into the UK in the first instance? Well, it all started with the European Union. The European Union created a directive that said that all listed groups had to prepare their group accounts based on international financial reporting standards for any periods beginning on or after the 1st of January 2005. So that meant that if you were quoted on the stock exchange anywhere in the European Union, so if you were quoted on the UK stock exchange or the French or the German stock exchange, if you were quoted on any European Union stock exchange, you had to prepare your group accounts using international financial reporting standards. And that was, as I say, from the 1st of January 2005. A couple of years later, they introduced that rule for companies listed on alternative markets. So, for example, in the United Kingdom, if you were quoted on the alternative investment market, the AIM as it's known, then you had to comply with international financial reporting standards from the 1st of January 2007. One other important change as well was that the United Kingdom Companies Act allowed for any other company in the UK, even the small and medium entities if they wanted to use International Financial Reporting Standard, although they weren't compelled to do so. And the vast majority of companies that aren't quoted in the UK still use UK GAAP for their accounts. So United Kingdom GAAP still had a place after 2005. And in fact, many, many companies and the whole of the public sector used and continued to use United Kingdom Generally Accepted Accounting Practice to prepare their financial statements. The public sector was switched to international standards initially from 2009-2010. So that's the financial year beginning on the 1st of April 2009 and ending on the 31st of March 2010. That also meant for those public bodies that they had to prepare a comparative set of accounts. So the comparative set from 1st of April 2008 to 31st of March 2009, they had to prepare those comparatives as well on the basis of international financial reporting standards. It was actually initially, the public sector were supposed to be using IFRS 1 year earlier, but in the 2008 budget, the government announced that they were going to give an extra year's grace to allow for the IFRS to be first introduced in 2009-2010. There's one other thing they said in that 2008 budget, and that was that for local authorities, they had an extra year's grace on this change. So local authorities, the first year they've had to use IFRS from is the 2010-2011 year end. So this year to 31st of March 2011 will be the first year that local authorities will be preparing International Financial Reporting Standards sets of financial statements. And of course, for those local authorities, they will have to have a comparative set from 2009-2010. International Financial Reporting Standards have many, many, many differences to UK standards. Some of them are small differences, some of them are differences relating to disclosure, and some of them are simple differences in terms of what they call things. So for example, fixed assets under international standards are no longer called fixed assets. International standards refer to fixed assets as non-current assets. So we have in the balance sheet current assets and non-current assets. Debtors, one of our current assets, would be known under international standards as receivables. And creditors, one of our current liabilities, known as payables. Stock is known as inventory. So they're all changes of terminology within the balance sheet. Also, for the financial statements themselves, we use different terms under international financial reporting standards. So the profit and loss account becomes the income statement. And there's also a further change there in that under international standards, the income statement, the profit and loss account, if you like, can be prepared as a statement of comprehensive income. And that would include showing the statement of recognized gains and losses as the bottom part of your profit statement, your P&L, or your income and expenditure statement, if you want. The balance sheet, similar change, is known as the statement of financial position. So no more balance sheets, statements of financial position. So there's major changes there in both the individual items that go in our financial statements and the names of the financial statements themselves. Of course, there's no law prohibiting you using the word fixed asset if you want to, and many companies that use international standards still carry on using the old terminology, but of course change it for their published accounts. International Financial Reporting Standard number one is an extremely important standard when you make that switch from UK GAAP to international GAAP. Once you've made that change, it ceases to have any relevance or importance to you, the International Financial Reporting Standard number one. But it tells us how we make the transition from UK GAAP to international GAAP. And the first thing that the standard tells you is that if, say, for example, you are making the move for your 2009-2010 year, then your transition date is actually 1 year earlier, on the 1st of April 2008. Because as I said earlier on in the podcast, it's that date from which you have to use international financial reporting standards. In fact, the year ended 31st of March 2009 will possibly be your hardest year in terms of accounting, because the 31st of March 2009 is your last UK GAAP year. So you've got to prepare UK GAAP accounts for that particular year. And then you've also got to prepare a second set of accounts for the 31st of March 2009 under international GAAP, because you'll need those as your comparatives for your 31st of March 2010 accounts. So your transition date is the start date for your comparative year, if you're having a 31st of March 2010 first year end of full IFRS accounts, then your transition date would be the 1st of April 2008. The other thing in IFRS 1 is that there are some areas where the international standards gives you a choice as to how you treat items that you're bringing forward from your old UK GAAP accounts into your new IFRS accounts. These are referred to in the standard as the exemptions from other international financial reporting standards. That's a rather strange way of expressing what the standard is allowing you to do. In simple terms, what the standard is saying is there are certain items that you can treat as if you'd always been using international financial reporting standards. So, for example, there are some instances where United Kingdom standards don't require us to make accruals. For example, for what are called Jubilee payments, long service awards to employees. But the international standards do require you to make those accruals. So when you do your transition set of accounts, let's say on the 1st of April 2008, you can choose to either say, well, we're going to assume that we've always used international standards, and we're going to put that accrual straight into our accounts as if it's always been there on the 1st of April 2008. Or you can say, no, what we're going to do is we're going to show it as it really was, that we've actually used UK GAAP up to the 1st of April and we're using international standards after the 1st of April. So in our first full year's income statement, we will show that accrual arising in that first year, in the year ended 31st of March 2009. So you have the choice, and there are a number of standards where you have the choice as to whether you treat things as if you'd always used international standards or show things as they really are, that you've only used international standards from your transition date. There are then a number of areas where you're not allowed to do this, where it's prohibited to do this. There are a number of areas where the standard says, no, you must treat things prospectively only. So when you switch to international standards, the things in this list, which are known as the exceptions to retrospective application of other IFRS, the things in this list you cannot treat as if you'd done them differently in the past, as if you'd done them under IFRS in the past. There are a number of items here, and if you want to have a look at them, and then you need to refer to the International Financial Reporting Standard. But just be aware that there are items that you must only account for prospectively. You cannot treat them as if perhaps you'd always used the international rule. Okay, and that's IFRS 1. So basically, international standards have been something that the bulk of the public sector has had to embrace for their 2009-2010 year end, and therefore they'll have had a transition date of the 1st of April 2008. For local authorities, they're having to embrace international standards for their 2010-2011 year ends with a transition date of the 1st of April 2009. Those international standards are part of a change that's been happening in the UK since 2005. The reason for telling you about that was that there is a lot of history and a lot of experience of implementing international standards that's available in the private sector if you can tap into it. The international standards have introduced lots and lots of changes, and we'll be dealing with some of those key ones in our next podcast, the second one in this series. On a simple level, they have introduced a number of terminology changes, introducing the idea of non-current assets, for example. And also, when you do make the transition to international standards, you need to be aware of IFRS 1. IFRS 1 is extremely important as you transfer from UK GAAP into international standards. And be aware in the IFRS that there are these unusual items, some of which you're allowed to retrospectively account for under IFRS as if you'd always used IFRS, and some of which you can only account for prospectively. So it's banned to retrospectively deal with these items. And that can make a major impact on the figures that you report under your first IFRS set of accounts. Okay, my name's Steve Carlisle. Thanks very much for listening. And please have a listen to the second in this IFRS podcast so that you can think about some of the key changes that IFRS introduces. Thanks very much. Goodbye.